Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Oscar Crawford. I'm back again with a follow-up conversation with Audrey Michelle, and it is a follow-up to Surviving a Narcissist. This will be a four-part conversation focused on the practice of accepting people for who they are without the need to control them or try to change them. This practice prompts personal growth and clarity about self while respecting others to be who they are without condition. Unconditional love is possible and practically applicable. Good afternoon to you all. Audrey Michelle, are you with me? Audrey, are you with me?
No, I'm here.
I am so glad to be connected to you again and for us to share this continuing conversation. I just briefed everybody on what our conversation is going to be today, that it is really going to be a follow-up to our initial talk about surviving a narcissist, and we can revisit any of that you'd like to today. But I want to further go on to this thing that you excel at, and that is the practice of accepting people for who they are without the need to try to change them, but to either decide to love them and be with them or to move on and still love them, but to accept them just as they are without the need to control them or to change them. Why don't you begin today with saying just a little bit about how you came to this practice? I mean, so many of us struggle with the whole notion of unconditional love, but I believe you've truly, you're on the path to mastering that. Could you begin there for us today?
Well, I just think that unconditional love means completely accepting somebody for who they are. And we're talking about abuse, and when it comes to abuse, a lot of times you'll hear the victims say that they love them and they want them to change, but the whole point of unconditional love is accepting them for who they are. So if you want them to change, that's not really what you're offering them, because you wouldn't want them to change at all. You want them just to be who they are. And the person that they are is who they are, whether or not someone wants to accept that or not. It's just a fact. You just have to accept them for what they are and how they treat you, or you've got to leave the relationship, but that's the only option.
Okay, and so could you talk a bit further about how you actually came to that? I'm certain that's not an end point, but at some point in your life and your own experience, you developed that as a conclusion. How'd you get there?
Well, it just makes sense to me because it's unconditional love. It's just something that just kind of put together for me. I just kind of got it. That's just my opinion of it, though. I mean, it's just by definition of it, unconditional love means loving without any kind of condition whatsoever, not expecting them to change or be any different from who they are. But that's...
Well, you know, I know you're a mom, and I know moms tend to be able to hold this as a concept and a practice probably more than any others.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us, though, we struggle with the notion of loving like
that's
that.
That's what we spoke about. But, yeah, I think that it's the kind of love that you give your kids that is beyond any love that you've ever imagined. And so it's an unconditional love, but I think that you can have that for other people. But when it comes to your child, it's even greater than that. But the difference, the thing about having a child is that this unconditional love that you receive, is, for me, it was, you know, huge. And for many people, it's the first time in their life they've ever had the kind of love that no matter what you do, no matter what you wear, no matter what you say, you're loved basically unconditionally. And so I think that there is an unconditional love between a parent and a child that just goes beyond anything that you can see. And once you have that, you understand it a lot better.
Okay, so did you grow up with this kind of loving experience as a child? Okay, let me, as you're, I hear that's probably a heavy one, but one of the things that I'm clear about, I'm very, very clear about, and I know it's tainted my approach, unconditional was not even in the vocabulary where I grew up, and I have a great deal of respect for my family, but everything was premised upon meeting conditions. If conditions weren't met, punishments followed. As I look back on it, I could never have done that to my own children. I've never done that
no.
to my children.
But I don't think that people that do it actually realize that they're doing that at all. I think that that it's a part of their nature. They don't realize, you know, if whether, you know, you see the difference between right and wrong. That's insane. And these people necessarily aren't insane. You know, they just don't have the same perception of the situation as the other person, or, you know, people that can see what they're doing do. So at the same time, it's not as if they're purposely being cruel or evil. In most cases, just a side effect of their survival and the way that they are and who they are. And they are not going to change because they don't know they're doing it, so how can they change it?
Okay, now I understand that, and I think that I've come to that with many people, and I've said to you before, and I'll now share it with those who will listen to us talk. You know, I find it a great deal easier to love someone whose behavior and lifestyle became offensive to me over time if they live many miles away from me. I actually have an ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
I care about her, but it's easier for me to have the kind of level of care I have for her with her living a couple of thousand miles away from me. If I had to be in her orbit on a regular basis, I'm not sure how well I would manage that, and I think I love pretty well, but that would challenge me a bit. And with my own family, again, I would say to you that I've learned to love them unconditionally because we finally got it all on the table and discussed it out. So we're okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of families can't really do that either. You know, a lot of times in families, there is, you know, if a person is treating them, a lot of times people that treat them in a negative manner also do not have the ability to accept accountability or guilt or you know, that they're at fault in any way. So they don't even want to say that they did anything wrong if they even can realize it. So there's no way to have a conversation about it or to clean the air with them. So you're talking about, you know, no matter what the issues is, if it's a healthy situation, sure, you can have a conversation and alleviate problems. But the problem with most situations that are negative is that is not a possibility. You can talk your head off and it's talking to a brick. Nothing's going to get through.
Okay, I do hear that. I know that as I've talked to people since we talked last about the things we might talk about today, people are asking me about, particularly women, but some men, they're asking me where does one draw the line between trying to live out unconditional love with someone they know they cannot change, and they're no longer making an effort to change but only to love, and when that is more abusive to them than they think they can continue to tolerate. Do you have any ideas for people who are trying to make those decisions?
The thing is that a lot of times when people are in it, their mind becomes more skewed, and they don't necessarily realize the depth of what they're going through in order to get out of a situation. Their minds are so confused and overtaken by the other person's, you know, moods or, you know, opinions, things like that. So they can't actually make a decision at that point to leave or to realize that things are wrong for them. It's very, very difficult to realize that when it's such a gradual process that has you completely and totally brainwashed to really see that you're in that situation. Once you see that, you know, you can want to leave, but the problem is that if you want to leave, you know, you have to do it. You can't expect to change the relationship or to solve any of the problems because you'll be doing that by yourself, and that's impossible. So if you get to the situation where you can't leave, you can't handle it anymore, or something occurs to you that you're in a bad place, you need to leave, and to do so with an understanding that that's your only choice, either to stay in what you're dealing with or to leave and deal with that. But there's no way to stay and have a better relationship.
No, and I agree with you, and I think that the hundreds of people I've dealt with over the years who've been wrestling with that question, once they did make a decision to step away, whether for a short period of time or for good, their observation of themselves backwards was they wished they had done it sooner. And when I would ask the question, why didn't they do it sooner, many people have just told me they didn't know they could, or they didn't know they had permission to step away, or some other thought that kept them bound to a situation that was punishing to them. Why do you think,
mm-hmm.
as adults, people will tend to take on abusive behavior and continue to ride it out when, as an adult, you could simply make a decision and walk away? What do you think the investment is in continuing to invest in that painful experience?
I've heard many times that people stay with the love they think they deserve, and I don't know if that, I mean, that's very basic anyway. I think it's much more deeper than that, but I don't think that people even if that is true, I don't think that it's any kind of point that they'll come up with that that's the truth. You know, they won't see that. But basically, codependency is an addiction to proving your worth to someone who never recognized it. So when you're in a relationship with somebody and they're treating you that way, you're addicted to it. There's highs and there's lows. There's good times and there's bad times. And you're addicted to those positives, even though they become so minute and so random that you are addicted to those few highs. It's as if the person gives you a gift card, you know, not a gift card, a greeting card for your birthday, and you haven't gotten a gift for your birthday in so many years that you're just, wow, how wonderful is he or she? They gave me this, and you go so extremely amazed by the smallest things that they seem so huge to you. So it's a situation where usually a person that abuses is addicted to control, and the person that they abuse is addicted basically to being abused, to trying to prove yourself to someone who won't ever see it. So when that combination comes together, there's a reason. There's some kind of psychological soulmate. It's as if you met your soulmate across the room. You know, it's just unbelievable how much that is because of your pattern of behaviors. So, you know, just growing up and becoming who you are, you're just absolutely addicted to this other person's behavior. So they don't, as much as the person that is abusive is a very skewed mind, the person that's being abused is a very skewed mind as well, because they're addicted to being treated that way. And they don't see that.
I agree.
They don't have any way out, and they seem completely helpless. You know, when they do see it, it's an unbelievable pull.
Well, that's one of the things that I hear. Women and some men say to me that from their personal development, depending upon whether or not punishment was physical in their house growing up, they tend to find relationships or emerge into relationships that reflect that same kind of behavior. So whether it was a woman or a man who may have been beaten or treated bad as a child, they managed to find a way to mate with somebody who will continue to deliver that same kind of attention. And there's hardly any way to intervene
themselves.
In that.
Or they'll become
That's
the abuser
too.
Themselves. They can go either
exactly.
way. And usually if it's physical, for some reason, if it's physical abuse, they become the abuser. And more so if it's mental abuse, you generally become the victim. It's just the way that it seems to work out. That's why more men are abusers or narcissists, and it tends to be that equal sex is a codependent, basically, because mental abuse is much more common.
Agreed. Now, I did have some men talk to me about that. A couple of generations of men, one talked to me about his father beat his mother unmercifully, right? I mean, just on a regular basis, beat his mom. And so he made it a point to never beat his wife, but he beat his kids, right? So nothing, the behavior didn't change. It's almost like alcoholics or drug abusers who finally mm-hmm. get clean. I mean, they substitute one self-destructive behavior for maybe applying that self-destructive behavior on somebody else. So if you were talking to a young person, let's say somebody in about to finish high school and go to college, and you were having a real heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul conversation with them, how would you help them prepare to think about their dating, mating rituals and what to look out for so they could have a more likely probability of living a more mentally healthy life than some may get opportunity to live? What would you say?
It's kind of hard, when you go in to talk to someone to make much of a difference at that age, because they're so overwhelmed with their family, and what their family atmosphere is basically what is going to overwhelm them. So I know I graduated as a teacher from college, and I know I taught for a while, and I could see where the teachers got so burned out, because no matter how many days, hours a week you spend with them, their parents are going to be the ones that really control their behavior, even if you have a short-term effect on them after that. They are going to be back with their parents again for, you know, another 8 years or whatever. So it's really hard to make too much of a, you know, not that you shouldn't try, but it's really hard to make too much of an effect on children. But I think as children, you know, as for my child, you know, the way I brought him up, he's very fluent in all of this that we're discussing. So he really understands. So it's very easy for me to say to something, to snap him out when his dad says something to him that hurts him. you know, it was very easy for me to get his mind straight, or to, you know, at this point, thankfully, because, you know, it's very scary when one parent is abusive and one's a victim. You know, the children take that on. So me leaving them still took me, you know, probably about 8 years before I could say that I didn't have to, you know, didn't act the same way anymore completely. So, you know, he could have taken after me, or he could have taken after his dad. So I'm really glad that I have the information. But that's just it, information, knowledge. You know, giving my son all of the tools so that he understands everything that goes on is going to make sure that he's safe from it. Not only do you have to train yourself, because your parents, your child is going to follow everything that you do. You can tell them all you want, everything in the world, but whatever you are, they're going to mirror. So if you're a codependent, they're going to become a codependent. You can tell them all the knowledge you want, but what you show them is what they're going to completely do. So I think the biggest thing is to be the strong role model, but when it comes to kids, it's also just giving them as much information so that they understand. And from what I've heard before, if they grow up in the right atmosphere, having a parent that's narcissistic ends up being a plus, because they understand the world better and they can take on the world better, whereas a lot of people like myself just were so naive to it that, you know, without having the knowledge and the understanding of it, that I had no idea what these people existed. You know, my son already knows that people like this exist and that's who they are. And no, they're not going to change, but you have to choose whether or not you're going to take the things from them that you're not. And I tell him with his dad all the time when he cries, I'm like, listen, if you want your dad in your life, this is what your dad is. You can't take these things to heart. And he really doesn't. But the once in a time he does, I can talk to him about it and everything like that. But I just think that just giving them as much knowledge and always being there to talk to you, but most important, being the role model and being who you want them to be, is the most important part of all.
Well, I'm certainly with you there. One of the there's a spiritual tradition in the country that call themselves the Unitarian Universalist, and I had the privilege to research them and spend some time with them years ago. And one of their investments in their children, as mm-hmm. individual families and as a corporate community family, is that they totally divest of themselves everything that they believe their children need to learn, even if it's uncomfortable information to share. They do that believing it's in the best interest of their family and their child to have information to make the decisions, even if they make the wrong one. They had opportunity to consider a number of options before they acted, and I think that's really quite good. And what you've done with your son, I tried to do with my daughters. And, you know, my daughters have no memory of me ever spanking them. I spanked mm-hmm. one of my children early on. True girl, I think I spanked her more because I was frustrated with something she was doing. I put her to bed, and a half hour later, I found her crying her little eyes out. She looked up at me and said, Daddy, I don't know how to be good. Well, my God, that sword is still sticking in me, and mm-hmm. I can't pull it all the way out. But it said everything to me, and I had to say to her, Baby, I don't know how to be good yet, and I'm your dad. And I think we can come to that and own that.
What a classical codependent mind is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she said she knew how to put that into words at her early age. Just beautiful that she could say that, because
yeah.
it really could reach you and hit you. Otherwise, you know, most kids, they would just cry and, you know, and hit or do something back, and that's usually what spanking causes them to become violent. So, you know, they would just break out in their own way and try to get attention. They wouldn't know how to put it into words, and, you know, it's amazing that she did. And that's what you were saying with telling your children, you know, with my son, it was got to the point where I never talked bad about his poorly of his father ever, because that's what you're taught not to do. But there was, he was 4 years old, and it's unbelievable to me at 4 years old, but I'm glad you said that about your daughter, because people don't really believe this. But my son, one day after school, he said to me, his dad's a droid. And I said, what's a droid? He said, an android, Mom. He looks like a person and talks like a person, but doesn't have a heart. And I didn't
think, oh my.
I was just a little surprised. A few weeks later, I picked him up, and he said, Mom, my dad has a bad brain. I said, what do you mean a bad brain? He said, well, it makes him do bad things. And I said, Gavin, I don't think when your dad does bad things, he does them on purpose. And he said, Mom, I know my dad. I know he smiles, and when he does bad things, he does them on purpose. And I was so shocked. I was in the front of the car, and I turned around and said, oh, my God, how do you know that? And I didn't mean to say that, but that was the beginning of where I realized whether if I don't tell him that the behaviors of his father are wrong, he's going to think that he's doing something wrong. So, you know, they say don't tell you, because if they're being abused, there's only one way to handle that, and that's if you can't get them away, of course. That's to tell them that, you know, that they're a parent. And I explained it to him. I said, you know how I have depression. I take medicine. I said, your dad has a brain problem, too. I said, but there's no medicine for it. So he, you know, when he looks at you, you know, when I look at you with so much love. And when he looks at you with just as much love. It's just a different kind of love. And it's not something that, it's not the kind of love you and I have. You know, so it was a way to explain things, but to explain things where there's no, you know, hating the other parent, things like that. He's got a right to develop his own mind on that. And, you know, and he's done, you know, great through the years. But he's just, you know, there's been a lot more things that happened with my ex where it was right in my son's face. So there was no way for him to not know what was going on. But I think that in any situation, it's very important to be honest with your children in a way that does not hinder the other parent, you know, because they have a right to their own feelings on it. Make sure that they know that they shouldn't put up with that, you know, and this and that. But, you know, now after all these years, you know, with his father living so far, he only sees him twice a year and, you know, loves his dad. You know, he's going to have to, just like any relationship, if you're going to be in a relationship, you're going to have to learn to deal with these things. And, you know, we talk them through, but that's the way it is because, you know, he's not changing.
No, I feel you. I truly, truly do. And one of the things that I'm as clear about as you're sharing here is that children pick up on those distinguishing characteristics between their parents. And at our best or worst, we can't really do anything. I mean, they're just little sponges, and they're getting it all. And
they do more than we do. I mean, they tell us things that we never even see in our own occurrences. You know, they, you know, when I'm acting a certain way because I just talked to someone that was abusive to me, my son will see it, and I'll see it in his eyes, and then I'll realize. But they see things that we don't even see. And we make decisions for them that we would never make for ourselves. So they make us a stronger person because we make good decisions because we have them, and then it ends up being perfect for our own lives.
Okay, let me just take a moment to do this and get people ready for, we will be back here again in 2 days, continuing this conversation on the 20th, and then we will be doing it next week on Tuesday and Thursday as well. My name is Oscar Crawford, and I'm sharing with my friend Audrey Michelle. We've known each other for some years now and talked through a number of things about how we practice our own personal development and enhance our relationships. So this conversation is to talk to the many who may still be going through some of the things that we survived, and we hope you'll continue to join us. All right, Audrey, if you ran into someone at Starbucks and just really quickly this person began to pour out their soul to you, or you could tell that they wanted to, and you could observe that they are probably mid-30s and stuck in this paradigm of being codependent, but they're kind of looking inside you for a moment to give them some relief or give them some direction, where would you suggest that person begin to begin to pull themselves out of the perception of being stuck?
Well, first of all, it's just not a fact. You know, there's nobody that's stuck. I mean, I would suppose, you know, it depends on the situation. Some people are sociopaths and things like that, and that makes it a little bit harder to get out of a situation because your life is at risk. So I think then you'll need other people and resources to help you get out of the situation because you have to be able, you might not have any money in situations. But for the person that is mentally abused and, you know, their life is in danger, then they need to do, they're the only ones that can make the choice. They're the only ones that can change. The abuser, you know, a narcissist can't be cured, so they're 100% never going to change. Whereas a codependent, it's very difficult to see your pattern, but once you do, you can change it. You're the only one in the situation with man or woman that's abusive that can actually leave. So when you find that out, I think that gives you a lot more ability to do so because you're not waiting on anybody else's course. And if you don't unconditionally love them, like we discussed in the beginning, then you can't say, well, I love them and this and that, because if you love them, then don't you think they deserve to be unconditionally loved as well, and maybe someone out there can love them for their abusive nature. Whatever the case may be, whether it's for the other person or for yourself, it doesn't make a difference. And that kind of, you know, you don't have to worry about their feelings, because either way, you know, you need to get out of the situation because they're not going to be able to adapt or alter their behaviors for anything long term. And you're going to be abused for the rest of your life, and being with them isn't good for them either. So with all of that, it just works out where you need to be the one to leave, and you're the only one that will.
Okay, I'm certainly with that, and it's true that if unconditional love is going to become a practice or a goal, it certainly has to start inside ourselves. And when we reach that point, when we've hurt to the point we don't want to hurt anymore, we are prompted to ask some questions. And we know people seldom are able to work these things out by themselves. But one of the things I encourage adults to do is just what we're doing now in front of other people. We talk. I mean, the more we talk, the more we come up with the questions. And I'm not into – I'm kind of like you on this. I don't believe in giving people answers because answers don't serve any purpose. But the right questions can help people focus on where they at least might begin to turn their lives around or go forward.
Right. That's very true. And I think that when they realize that the choice is completely on them and they do have that choice, I mean, then I think that also takes them a lot further. So you need to teach the person, you know, what to do rather than just tell them.
Okay, tell me this. Do you have any books that come to mind that you would recommend the reading of for people who might be listening to us?
Well, anybody that knows me knows I'm a big supporter of Sam Bachman, and his book is Malignant Narcissist, The Victim Through the Eyes of the Abuser. It really gives you the dimension of being able to see through the abuser's eyes and why they do things, and real answers that almost are shocking in how much they relate to your life. It's as if it was written specifically for you, but everything's so textbook that it's hard to believe that it's just with almost any situation. But I think that book is really what gave me all of the answers I needed. Rather than just throwing facts at you, it actually is explained in a way that your mind can actually take them on and rebuild stronger of your own thoughts from it. I think that there's nothing that compares to that book. So it's Bachman, and it's Malignant Self-Love, Narcissism Revisited.
Okay, well, listen, I've done some of that work. Done some of that reading from the text. One of the ones that I keep going back to, I go back to this one every time I need to. When I got out of the military and went to college, I was kind of emotionally messed up, and so I needed something to help me refocus, and I discovered a book called Psycho-Cybernetics. The premise of the text is that the brain or the mind cannot tell the difference between a real or a really well-imagined experience. So if I can develop an idea that I want to develop my life to be like, if I can do that, then I can start to walk to it. But I have to begin to act it out in my head before I act it out in my personal life. It's kind of like athletes who rehearse their athletic performances before they're called on to do them. And brain scans have shown that mental rehearsal fires off the same places in the brain as actually doing the performance. So I really try to encourage people to. Okay, Audrey, we have 90 seconds to go. Let me give you the first 45 seconds to kind of summarize the things that you've shared today, and then I'll clean up the program and invite people to join us again on Thursday.
Okay, basically I think that what we're talking about is that when you find yourself in a situation where you are waiting for the other person to change because they don't treat you right, you've just got to realize that that's who they are, and whether if you're going to accept them, then you're going to accept them, and you're going to have to accept all the behaviors that they offer you. And if you can't accept them, then you're going to have to leave, and you're going to have to leave with the knowledge that that's the only way, that's the only choice that you have. And once you realize that if you stay, the abuse is always going to be there, and you're always going to have to take the brunt of it, then you have to understand that that's never going to change. And in that way, you have to take accountability at the fact that you're choosing to stay in an abusive situation that's never going to change. And I think that bringing the accountability part of it in there is really a pusher to get people out, because that's what they're choosing to stay in it, and it's never going to be any different than it is.
Thank you. Thank you so, so very much. Listen, for everybody who's listening to us, Audrey Michelle is one incredible woman soul who has learned how to love in the context that is so empowering and liberating. We invite you to join us again on Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Arizona time and 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We hope to see you again then.
Thank you.
You too.